From the Los Angeles Times, this is The Envelope, the podcast, your ultimate guide to award season. We're your hosts. I'm Yvonne Vieriev.
And I'm Mark Olson. Every week, our podcast showcases key voices across both TV and film.
And today, we're so excited to have Rashida Jones as a guest on our show. You've seen her in classic TV comedies like Parks and Rec and The Office. How sad is it that we now call those classic? But this year, she stars in director Sofia Coppola's father-daughter dramedy, On the Rocks.
We talk about that new film from A24 and Apple TV+, and about the relationship Sofia and Rashida have with their own larger-than-life fathers, Francis Ford Coppola and Quincy Jones.
I think what we do have in common is we love our dads. We're charmed by our dads. I think we're old enough now that we're charmed by our dads. And I won't speak for Sofia, but I'll speak for myself. But I'm also very aware of his shortcomings.
Mark's conversation with Rashida is coming up in just a couple minutes.
COVID-19 is moving fast, and so are LA Times journalists.
Our job is to separate fact from fiction, because you also help spread the truth when you are informed.
Because in a society where we all have to stand 6 feet apart, the LA Times is our connection. It's become our community.
We're going to be here giving you information to offer a little bit of clarity.
Stay safe, be informed, take care of one another. We'll get through this.
Subscribe at latimes.com.
Before we get to Mark's chat with Rashida Jones, let's turn things over to our critic Glenn for Glenn Whip's Awards Minute. Glenn, what do you have for us today?
So maybe you've been hearing about all these movies like Nomadland and Minari, and they sound great, and you can't wait to see them, but you're like, I can't see them. What can I see right now that's a great movie? Here's a movie for you. It's dropping on Christmas Day, Disney Plus, and it's the latest movie from Pixar Animation. It's called Soul. It's probably going to win the animated feature Oscar. That much is a given, but I think also it could be a contender for Best Picture. And no animated film has ever won Best Picture. I know that. But no international film had ever won Best Picture until Parasite came along. So these barriers are made to be broken, and Soul is kind of the special movie that could break that kind of barrier. But Soul is about a black jazz musician who falls through a sewer hole, and he lands in this place that's somewhere between life and death. And then it gets kind of complicated. It's a movie about what is your purpose in life? What is the meaning of life? It's amazing. I could go on, but I think you need to see it yourself. And then once you've just wiped away the tears, you'll understand what I'm talking about. This is going to be a major contender at the Oscars this year. It's top tier Pixar. I think you're going to love it.
Thanks, Glenn. And now, Mark, let's get to your interview with Rashida Jones. I've seen her in so many things over the years, so I was surprised to learn that this is only her second lead role. A true travesty, I must say.
Yeah, and actually her first was in a movie called Celeste and Jesse Forever, which she actually co-wrote.
Yes, with Andy Samberg, who we had as a guest. So for all those listeners, please go back and check out that episode. And she's also worked as a writer and producer on some other big name projects like Black Mirror and Toy Story 4. I'll let her tell you more. Let's get to your interview with Rashida Jones.
As we're recording this, it's not so long ago that your former Parks and Recreation co-star Joe Biden was elected president of the United States, along with Vice President Kamala Harris. That must be pretty exciting for you.
Yeah, you know, we never crossed over on Parks and Rec. We were in two different casts. Like when Anne and Chris, oh my gosh, I almost forgot all the characters' names, left, Leslie's career really ramped up, and that's when she met Joe. But I think it's very exciting. Just the notion that Leslie Knope is the most physically attracted to Joe Biden of anybody else in the world is like one of my favorite character traits. That's her whole thing, is that she's like, she wants somebody with the mind of Brad Pitt and the face and body of Joe Biden. It's her ideal man. It's really funny.
Well, that leaves hope for others, I think.
Definitely excited to see what they do, what they don't do.
You've been quite active as a campaigner and on social media for a lot of candidates and causes over the last few years. Why is that something that's important to you? Why did you kind of want to get more sort of like politically active?
I have like stumped for a ton of candidates in high school. I was on the mayor's youth advisory council. I've always been like somewhat interested in civics and politics because we have a kind of a cool system. Like we have a whole cool like checks and balances, local versus federal relationship when it comes to politics. And also like it is this weird intersection, like where culture and politics really have met in the middle in terms of like the power and the influence that it has on like the greatest amount of people, whether it's in this country or internationally. Like you've seen the way other countries have responded to this election, particularly like everybody's so invested in it. It's a cultural event too, because so much is wrapped up in the kind of, I hate to use the term branding, but there is some sort of like branding and meaning in what you believe in and who you support that makes politicians uniquely powerful in terms of their influence and how they impact people. So I don't know. I've always like, I think this year I was really interested in all of the many, many Black candidates down ballot, Senate, vice president, who ran and won, because seeing like the long history of this country from where we started, the kind of dark place where we started, and then seeing like this real building of political power for Black people, I think is just an amazing sign of history and time and change.
As well, over the last few years, you had written an episode of Black Mirror. You directed a film about your father, Quincy Jones. It seemed like you were sort of moving away from acting a little bit. And then this year, you've kind of come back in a big way with both Black AF and On the Rocks. Like, am I reading this incorrectly? Like, do you feel like you've sort of like stepped back to acting?
I mean, I think that I was looking to kind of be challenged in other arenas. And, you know, with acting, you have so little control over the jobs that you're offered. Whereas like with writing and producing, you can create things from the ground up. So I just like happened to be lucky enough this year to be contacted by two people who had had a previous relationship with Kenya Barris and Sofia Coppola, saying, hey, do you want to do this thing? Which like after 20 plus years of being an actress, like I very rarely had those moments where like people that I look up to and respect come to me and ask me to do stuff. So yes, I moved back towards acting, but I think it was like just a weird, sheer dumb luck of me being somewhat in the peripheral vision of like two talented people.
Because I've heard you describe yourself as a Jill of all trades. Like, do you think you have like a particular aptitude for doing different things, for like not just having sort of one task on the team?
I think I am just slightly above mediocre at most things. Like, I think I can handle and skillfully navigate like lots of different little jobs. But I think probably if I had a talent, I hope it's taste and choice when I'm in a position to choose things. Like with writing, there's just no way around it. Like it's hard work, hard work, hard work, just drafting, drafting, drafting. It's a grind, you know? And like, yes, you absolutely have to wait for those moments of inspiration, but in the meantime, you just have to work hard. Whereas with acting stuff, like it's so much of it is luck. And yeah, of course it's work and discipline, but like you can't control the day, what the light's going to be like. And if they got the take where you had the best performance, and if you're like in the zone, I mean, there's only so much you can control that. So I think in life, yes, I'm okay at a lot of stuff. And then I think with other people, I can be a little bit more than okay with other people's help.
Because on Black AF in particular, you're an executive producer on the show. You directed an episode. You act in all the episodes. Do all those things kind of flow together easily? Does it feel like you're wearing a lot of hats when you're doing all those different jobs on a show like that?
I would say the producing part and the acting part definitely flow together. And even just like having some proximity to the writer's room and stuff, because it's all like building a character and trying to like create the funniest scenarios for that character. I feel a little challenged when I'm directing and acting, because those feel like very, very different skill sets, where like you have to be totally in the thing or totally outside of the thing in order to be the best at that job. But I think ultimately, Kenya was so supportive of me in all of those roles that he made sure that, like, if I was acting in a scene, that he was there to direct me in that scene. So I didn't feel like I had to step out of that. You know, you kind of black out when you're acting. You can't pay attention to how it's coming across. If you do, like, it actually takes you out of that moment. So you just have to have like a little team and sort of like plan A, plan B around that stuff.
And then with On the Rocks, I was so surprised to realize that this is only really your second lead role in a movie. And what was it like for you when Sofia Coppola comes to you with this part?
I mean, it's crazy because that's the kind of thing, like, had you told me 10 years ago that was going to happen, I would say, no, absolutely, no way, you're wrong, you got the wrong person. And also, I think I would just be so filled with, like, excitement and then immediate just like fear that I wouldn't be able to deliver, that I wouldn't even be able to believe it. So that part of myself still exists. So I was like, I just couldn't believe that she had even been focused on me in that way at all. But also, like, I think I'm old enough now that I can feel like a collaboration. So I'm really grateful for the fact that age does give you this weird thing where, like, you've experienced the good, you've experienced the bad, and you're like, okay, let me just try to make the best of this situation so I could meet that moment of her saying, hey, you know, I have this script and I've thought about you for the lead, with like, oh, great. Like, how can we really make this movie great and this character great together, as opposed to feeling all the weight and the pressure and the stress of like trying to make it right for other people. But anyway, the point was, yes, it felt great.
Because Sofia has said that it's not purposeful, but that it's just worked out that every 10 years she's made a movie with Lost in Translation, then Somewhere, and now On the Rocks. That's sort of like a personal check-in, that are very much like about kind of like stages of her life. And so knowing that this movie, this story and the character that you're playing is very personal to her, does it become very personal to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was like a kind of a natural synergy there in terms of like, I relate to a lot of father-daughter stuff and like mom of young child stuff, and getting to a certain point in your life where you're had all these like really big dreams and all this determination to get you to this moment. And then you look around and you're sort of like, what is my relationship to all these things that I've built in my life, whether it's my career, my marriage, or my family, or my relationship with my parents, or whatever it is, like, how do I fit into all this? Like, am I just relational, basically? Like, that stuff was very personal to me. And also something like Sophie and I discussed a lot while making the movie. But I do feel like a responsibility, like playing like a surrogate of her. And I think we're similar and we're different. I wanted to try to evoke some of like Sophia's natural kind of grace, and like sometimes she's really good at listening and being laconic and respectful of somebody else's journey before she kind of jumps in and has her own take. And I feel like this character is sort of internal. There's a lot of like listening and reacting, or trying not to react and staying neutral before she finally has enough. So like, I wanted to make sure that I respected that part of the character.
And now in the movie, your character, her father is this sort of larger than life bon vivant played by Bill Murray. And having a larger than life father is something that you and Sophia have very specific knowledge of. And so what are those conversations like? Like, how are the two of you sort of sharing those experiences, like what your respective fathers are like? And like, how does that make its way into the story and into the movie?
Well, I think what we do have in common is we love our dads. We're charmed by our dads. I think we're old enough now that we're charmed by our dads. And I won't speak for Sophia, but I'll speak for myself. But I'm also very aware of his shortcomings. You know, I made a documentary about him. So I spent so much time like really dissecting his life and spent a lot of time with him. So we talk about everything from the difference in generations. You know, my dad is 87. So he was born in the 30s. Like, that is a fully different perspective on life in this country and race and class and everything, you know? So the fact that he's like as hip as he is for 87, like, I'm sure I'll just be like, kids, when I'm 87. I think he's extraordinary in that way, where like he really likes to keep up. But so that's not quite like Felix in the movie is a little bit more like he's in his era. He will be in his era forever. And there's kind of nothing, there's no conversation to be had for him to change. They just have to like change the nature of their relationship. So that's a bit different than my relationship, but I think that there are generational differences and there is this love and frustration that you love this person so much, but you are somewhat speaking different languages, you know?
And then as well in the movie, your character explicitly has biracial parents, and that's something that's kind of dealt with in the movie. And I don't know if that's something that you sort of asked for or came from conversations with Sophia, but was it meaningful to you that that wasn't something that was kind of vague in the movie, but that was very like spelled out?
Yeah, it was really important to me. I can't tell you the amount of times in my career where I've like gotten a part or been up for a part and gotten really excited and then immediately had this like preemptive dread about how they would cast my family, because I know it sounds ridiculous now because like, I feel like there's a lot more biracial representation. But at the time I was like, because my hair's straight and my eyes are light, not everybody's going to know right away that I'm half black. And I would have conversations to be like, listen, you have to represent me in my family. Like if my family's going to be cast, you have to represent both sides. And for some reason, like it was so, it felt as an actress with somebody who doesn't have much power in the chain of command, like it felt really weird to have those conversations. So luckily I'm older and that's not a problem. And it was never even a question for Sophia. We talked a lot about the families, like my family and my parents and what that would look like. And I think there's so many ways forward in terms of representation that need to happen. We have to fill in the gaps in so many ways. And sometimes it's a full demonstrative announcement that we're watching a black family and you have to understand their blackness in every moment. And then sometimes it's like just seeing a black family in a Sofia Coppola world that, I don't know, there's something really nice about it because it's like we don't talk about it and there's like little subtle things that come up, but like it just is. And I think that there's some beauty in that because it just is and we don't comment on it very much. And there's like subtle undertones, but I think it takes both sides of the spectrum to really change the conversation.
You know your smart, funny friends who always seem to have the best celebrity gossip? I'm talking about the ones who always know what you should be watching or reading or listening to. But what if you could pick their brains every week? Pop Chat from CBC is a brand new podcast that does exactly that and feels like spending time with your best friends. You can join in the weekly group chat every Wednesday and subscribe for free on the CBC Listen app or wherever you go to get your podcasts.
One of the things I like so much about the movie is there's this kind of deceptive simplicity to it. Like it seems sort of like freewheeling and kind of screwball. But then the conversations that you're having with Bill Murray's character or with Marlon Wayans, who plays your husband, they're like real, genuine, sort of emotional, thoughtful conversations. And I like this kind of really unusual balance that the movie strikes. It's like an interesting and sort of unusual tone that it has.
Yeah, well, I think it's something Sophia does so beautifully with all her films because it's like her aesthetic and the aura of her filmmaking is so distinct and you feel like you're traveling to a different planet. And within that planet, the rules of engagement are a little bit different. And there is like this kind of light touch to it, but that doesn't mean that's at odds with depth. It's the way into the world. And then once you're there, it's like, you feel all the melancholy and the deep conversations and whether she's tackling like fame and relevance fading or being lonely in a relationship or feeling insecure that your husband's cheating, whatever it is, like it's not undone by her aesthetic. You just have to like enter that world and know that you're kind of speaking a different language on a different planet.
I know her scripts often are kind of spare, like in their language, like they're short a lot of times. And so I'm wondering, there are scenes in the movie where you're just kind of looking out the window or you're just sort of alone in your apartment. What do those scenes read like on the page? And how does Sophia kind of convey to you what she wants? Like, what are you thinking during those scenes when you're just looking out a window?
Again, not to speak for Sophia, but I think this was an interesting exercise for her because I think this is by far her most chatty movie. And she wanted it to be. And I think that was like that she pushed herself really to that. But in my head, yeah, like that stuff, her asking me to just kind of like drift off or procrastinate or watch TV and consider my own life, she would give me like a couple little things and then I would just kind of do it until she felt like I had done it enough. But I feel like I also have to just like remember that everything is sort of alive and in those moments, you know, like it's not like it is private, but it's still alive. You know, there's something sort of like universal and cinematic about it. It isn't like so private and so internal. Did I answer your question? I don't know if I did.
No, completely. Okay. And it's funny because the world of the movie feels so complete. Everything in the movie seems so carefully like chosen and curated. Like there's a moment when your character, you have a Chanel handbag and a Strand Books like tote bag like that you're wearing at the same time. And like, that's just like so specific. And does it really feel like you've entered this like sort of this world when you're making this movie?
Totally. I mean, that's a real testament to Sophia and the people she works with all the time, from, you know, the costume designer, Stacey, to the DP, to the production designer. Like, everybody sort of aimed towards the same thing, which is like creating that atmosphere. So it feels like this like complete circle. And that's not to say like Sophia was totally open to little suggestions or whatever, but that Strand bag, you know, paired with the Chanel bag, or like my Karen Callahan cargo pants paired with like a Prada, whatever, like that kind of thing was sort of like a way to really define this character. And like, it might seem just superficial, but the truth is it belies so many other things about her and her relationship with her father and where she lives and how she spends her time and how she wants other people to see her. Like, she's erudite, but she loves a designer, you know, like those are things that are important to that character.
You know, one part of the movie is really about your character feeling sort of lost within her own life and the way that people, as they, you know, get into middle age and get into parenting, and I think especially for women, they can feel kind of overlooked. And for you in your own life, is that something that you related to with regards to the character?
Yeah, I think the question about what your life purpose is and what you want your life to be changes so much in your late 30s and your 40s, because I think you're always focused when you're young on like where you're going to be when you're like an adult, 30s and 40s. Like, I'm going to be this, I'm going to have accomplished this, blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, oh, wait, I have the entirety of the back half of my life still to live. And so then you start asking bigger questions like, will I have a legacy? Will I ever create anything truly great? Will I be alive for my kids' wedding? You know, will I have grandkids? Will I fix things with my parents before they pass? Like, all these kind of bigger existential questions about who you are on the earth and like, you know, what will you leave behind? And will you leave this place better than you found it? And will you pass stuff on to your kids that you got from your parents, good or bad? So I do feel like the questions have changed, and that kind of invincibility that you feel leading up to your 30s and 40s fading and it becoming about something else, like, that is very, very personal to me.
And then as well, as much as the movie is about the relationship between a father and a daughter, when you were shooting the movie, it was really not long after you had lost your mother, Peggy Lipton. And what did that do for you? It seems like being in a moment thinking about parents and these kind of relationships, it must have made the shoot that much more kind of emotional and intense for you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think I can characterize that time, because I was in like such shock and grief. And to be honest, some days I was just happy to have somewhere to go where like I could be with lovely people and like we could tell each other jokes and I knew I'd be well taken care of and like eat nice food and focus on working and like creating a great scene and like just keeping things incredibly small in terms of my goals, because it is the overwhelming grief that just kind of never ends. It becomes part of your life. Like, you get used to it, I think. At the time, it was so soon after that I had no template for how to deal with it. So there was days when I was just in denial, and then there was days when I just couldn't help it and it grabbed me hard and like threw me to the floor and I would just have to excuse myself. And the fact that I was just around people who were okay with where I was right then, I'm actually really grateful for the experience, because had I not been working with this group of people, I'm not sure. This was the best case scenario of a very, very not great scenario.
Yeah, I know from my own experience with grief, it's something where I always think I'm okay. And then you sort of like, it sort of like strikes you all of a sudden, like, oh, I'm very not okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so beyond your control. I mean, there is something kind of like, I'm almost grateful for the feeling because I'm somebody who prides myself on like really trying to be appropriate about bringing certain feelings to certain places so that I don't blow up anything. And grief has this like, what is it called when you like solder something like a welder? Like it has this really penetrating, searing effect where it like doesn't matter where you are and how you've steeled yourself and prepared yourself or grieved in the past, like it will just like cut through steel, just like cut through metal, and just all before you know it, bam, you're on the other side of it and it'll knock you on your face. And there's something kind of amazing about that because it feels otherworldly where it's like, hey, that person that you love so much that you're never going to see again, like I'm still here and I'm still going to be with you. Like wherever you go, wherever you try to run to, like too bad, you know?
Yeah, really one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and frankly, it's one of my favorite scenes I think I've seen all year, is kind of late in the film. You and Bill Murray are in, you've made your way to Mexico and you're like watching this sunset. He starts telling you this story about a woman that he knew, how she had passed away, and it's the woman he had left your character's mother for. And so in so many ways, it's like the last person your character has any emotional space for or wants to consider. And yet your character sort of opens herself up to what he's feeling there. There's just something really vulnerable and beautiful in that scene. And just tell me a little bit about shooting that scene. I think Bill Murray's performance in particular there is just really astonishing.
Yeah, I definitely felt that at the time too. Like, you know, we were at the end of the shoot and we were all in Mexico and like all these crazy things had been happening. Like the electricity went out and there was lightning storms and it felt like kind of chaotic in a way that I think was really probably good for that moment. But yeah, I was really taken with him in that scene and like my response to him was totally organic because I think if I zoomed back and I talked about it theoretically, I think there is this thing, you know, like I have six siblings, there's five moms, there's lots of feelings and everybody had different childhoods and we've had to learn how to kind of accept each other, even though it's not like a perfect family. And I think in doing that, like we've had to just see everybody as kind of human and flawed, and especially my dad, who's like had a lot of failed relationships and he's hurt a lot of people. And yet we still kind of come together and we still have to feel his pain, like and his failures in a way, in order to love him. And that felt really true to me. And I feel like having that level of empathy, even when your dad hurt your family, that feels like the whole point, right? I mean, we're kind of lacking that in this country right now, but it does feel like that's the whole point. It's like, can you see the humanness in them for that one moment, even if it's not the choices you would make? Like, it doesn't make that person any less human.
And then, especially as you're at this point in your career where you have been wearing a lot of different hats, when you're working with someone like Sophia and you're watching her direct, are you stealing stuff? Like, do you have like a mind of like, what can I sort of like take from what she's doing yes. and take onto my next project?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I mean, I admire Sophia in so many ways as a friend and as a director and as a creator. But I like promised myself after working with her that I was going to try to take away a few key things of how she leads, because she leads in like such a relaxed, elegant way where like, you know who the boss is, like, you know who's in charge. Bill actually calls her boss, but she doesn't impose anything. So it's like, she just manages to do what so many people try to do without yelling and screaming and being like authoritative or anything. She just has a grace about her. And also she doesn't make it about emotion. She makes it about the work. It never feels like there's an end of the line. Like there's always another way. And I hope that I can exercise those things next time I direct.
Rashida, thank you so much for taking some time to talk today. I have just one more question, which, you know, everybody has been basically stuck at home for what seems like forever now. Has there been anything that you've watched during this time that's like really stood out for you? Like, is there anything that you would recommend to other people?
Yeah, I mean, there's been so much watching, but I think the things that stand out to me, I would say I May Destroy You was just knocked me on my ass. I've never seen TV do that much and make me feel that much and bend so many genres and be so thoughtful and complicated and difficult. It just was such a successful like piece, TV or not, just a successful piece of everything, you know, just craft. And then I just recently started watching How To with John Wilson, which I really love. It's on HBO and it's really like funny. It's sort of touching. It kind of gives me faith in humanity in a weird way. It's so strange, but I really enjoyed that. And then, you know, and then on the way other side, like early quarantine, we were like very good about having like movie club and movie nights. And we did like a whole Billy Wilder festival. And like, I had just forgotten how good Sunset Boulevard is. Man, what a movie. What a movie. And it's funny and it's modern and it's so dark and it really still feels like Hollywood. And Wilder is so, he's so cynical. Like all of his endings of his movies are like, well, people are fucked up. And there's something I love about that, where it's like the last line in Some Like It Hot is like, I can't remember the line, but it's like, it's basically just like an acceptance of how deeply messed up people are. And like, what are you going to do? This is who we are.
I believe it's nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect. There you go. Yes. Good. Good pull, Mark. Yeah. Nobody's perfect. And that's it, right?
I think that's actually on Wilder's headstone.
Oh, it is? Amazing. That's amazing.
Those are some great recommendations for people.
Yeah. It's pretty dynamic collection there.
Mark, I really loved that interview. When she talked about losing her mom, the stuff she said about grief and sort of all its unexpected intensity was something I think we could all identify with on some level. How was that for you, like talking with her about that?
Yes, I found that I was getting emotional while we were having the conversation. I was so touched by how open she was. And to think that she was shooting the movie while she was still really sort of like in her grief was really impressive and also kind of makes her performance in the movie that much more touching.
No, her performance was great. I was so glad to have watched this film this week, knowing she was going to be a guest on our show. I made sure to add it to my list. Mark, was there anything you watched this week or caught up on?
You know, it's funny. In a previous episode, you had mentioned how you should probably try and catch up on watching the Godfather movies. And I forgot to mention that newly released on home video is Francis Ford Coppola made a new version of The Godfather 3 called The Godfather Coda, The Death of Michael Corleone. And it actually is really good to watch. It like, I think that movie always had a sort of an unfairly bad reputation anyway. There are some really terrific performances in it by Al Pacino, Andy Garcia, and this new version actually sort of, I think, improves on Sofia Coppola's performance in the movie. So I actually would recommend that people give a look to The Godfather Coda.
Oh, well, I think I might do that. Like, is The Godfather available on any streaming services? Because like I said, when my brother was watching it, there was the commercial breaks because it was playing on cable. And I would like to watch it without interruptions, but maybe I'll just have to look that up. You're going to look it up?
Let me look real quick. Hold on. Yeah. Oh, it's like you can, I don't know if it's free to stream, but you can definitely like rent it from on your VOD platforms.
Okay. Well, I know what I'll do with my 1 or 2 days off. So I'll report back.
Well, I can't wait to hear your take on all those movies. And then who are you going to be sitting down with next week, Yvonne?
Well, I sat down, quote unquote, with Shira Haas. We talk about her Netflix show, Unorthodox.
I mean, we get messages from people from so many different countries and so many different backgrounds and ages and religious and non-religious and Jewish and Muslims. And it's just, it got to so many people and it's amazing. It's better than we ever dreamed of, I guess. Yes, really, I'm grateful for that.
Get that conversation with Shira, the last episode of our podcast for 2020, next Wednesday.
The Envelope, the podcast, is hosted and reported by me, Yvonne Villarreal, and by my colleague, Mark Olson. Our producers are Paige Heimson and Shannon Lin, and our executive producer is Abby Fentress-Swanson. Our audio engineer is Mike Heflin. Mike also made our theme song.
If you like The Envelope, the podcast, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a 5-star review on Apple. Cheesy, but it really does help.
It really does. The Envelope is created by the journalists at the LA Times. Right now, access to facts has never been more important, and the Times is in the business of reporting them. Stay connected and subscribe, because your subscription supports the production of podcasts like this one and our award-winning journalism. Visit latimes.com/supportlatimes to subscribe.
Thanks for listening, and see you next time.